What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike, he's Kev. Coming up on today's show, a roller coaster of things to cover, from the U.S. Open Cup loss to the Hounds getting their first win in league play to the replacement of Coach Steffens. Let's go.
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen, out to the middle, back to
So, Kev, there's a lot of things to cover, and we're going to try to keep this to the 40-minute mark. So we're going to dive right in. Obviously, like I said, a lot going on. A bit of a somber moment, but I think also one that we both sort of support. The Hounds head coach, Coach Steffens, has been let go. Everybody has said that it was a mutual departure, which I think is really interesting, Tuffy Schallenberger, who owns the team, basically came out and said, you know, we appreciate what Mark has done in his time with the club. You never like to see things of this nature happen, but we both agreed this was the best decision for the club's future. We wish Mark the best of luck in his future endeavors. And there was one other outlet where he sort of stressed over and over again that it was mutual. And even Coach Steffens said it was mutual, which is a bit odd, but at the same time, you know, there are a number of events that have happened with this team early on that, who knows, you know, maybe Coach Steffens was ready to sort of step aside and hand it off to somebody else.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, if you're friends with this, like, you know, if you're friends in a relationship and they're constantly like, oh, it's great, we go camping every weekend, like, even if you don't bring it up, like, something's weird happening. Yeah. Kind of like, oddly, like, it's great, everything's great, we're fine, we're good. It's, you know, and yeah, I guess that's kind of, you know, them constantly saying it was mutual, kind of feels like that. But yeah, I mean, like you said, you never want anyone to lose their job. And he did seem like a pretty nice guy. And obviously, I mean, even from what we've heard of from the players, I mean, we did the interview with Jordan Russell last week. And
Drew Russell.
I was thinking Jordan Merle, played in the Toronto game, and that's why he was on my mind. Drew Russell, and you can tell he kind of had, you know, a certain level of appreciation towards Coach Steffens, and it seemed like he liked him a lot. So yeah, I mean, but like you said, I think this is both something that we support and something that I think makes me a bit more optimistic going forward.
Yeah, you feel for the guy. You know, it seemed that the way the news was broken was actually in the post-game press conference, where somebody asked him, you know, what are the emotions like after the Hounds got the win against TFC2? He mentioned it was bittersweet. And then you could tell he was starting to get choked up a little bit and said it was his last game.
By the way, what do you think about the news breaking like that? I mean, that's something I've never seen before. Usually, you know, things kind of play out, and then the next day maybe the club makes a statement. And
well, it's funny because it sounded like he knew going into the game, and it sounded like the coaching staff knew going into the game. And actually, going back and watching the game again after we knew things, in hindsight, it looked like the players knew it as well. Because
yeah,
we'll get into it, but when Maloto scored that first goal, he immediately turned and pointed and ran to Coach Steffens. And there was a moment where it was like everybody was piling on. And it didn't seem like they were piling on Maloto. They were piling on Coach Steffens. So
yeah,
I think they very much went out and tried to win it for him, which, you know, kudos to the team for doing that. But yeah, you know, like we said, it's difficult because you're right. Everybody we've talked to have spoken extremely highly of him. And so, you know, whatever he does moving forward, we obviously wish him the best of luck, whether it's coaching in another USL team or it's, you know, coaching youth teams or whatever it may be. Overall, you know, just to sort of recap what he did with the Hounds, he had a record of 12, 13, and 11 with his time in Pittsburgh. which isn't great, but from 1997 to 2014, he coached the Charlotte Eagles, who at that time were part of the USL. He had won two championships with them. He was awarded the USL Coach of the Year twice in 2004 and 2008. And in 2007, he was named to the USL Hall of Fame. So this isn't like this is somebody that we brought in that didn't know what they were doing. I mean, this guy knew the USL. He's in the USL Hall of Fame. And to be honest, there were a lot of difficult things that he had to deal with coming into the season that were somewhat out of his control. So, you know, obviously people are still talking about the loss of Rob Vincent, and we're 8 games into the season. You know, you lose somebody of that caliber up to the next level, you need to deal with that. And we brought in some players to try to see what would happen. And in all fairness, Romeo Parks was putting the ball in the back of the net, and nobody could have planned for what happened with Romeo, where he ends up, you know, kicking a guy in the back. They end up cutting him from the team. That sends just shockwaves through the whole team that, you know, is difficult for anybody to adjust to. That said, we still weren't winning even with Romeo in the lineup. And not that winning is everything. I think Kevin and I have been...
I mean, it's a lot of things.
It's a lot of things, yes. It's a lot of things. Kevin and I have been sort of critical about playing players in one position and familiarity and consistency, and that was just something that we hadn't seen this season. And how much of that was out of his control, I don't know. But again, you know, the Hounds have decided to move forward. So there's going to be a lot of stuff going on here now over the next week or so, week plus. They have instituted a new coach, Dave Brandt. There's a number of articles.
By the way, before we get into him too much, we talked about this a bit before, and I just want to extend the conversation for the podcast. What are your thoughts on how quickly the new assignment kind of came up? Because I think, and I would maybe say, I don't know, 60 to 70 to 80% of other instances, when you get a situation like this, the manager gets sacked and there's maybe an interim manager in place to kind of hold down the ship while they look for another manager. I mean, it was... So the fact that this new manager is being brought in suggests that they've been kind of looking around for a while. While at the same time, I don't know, maybe that's not the case. I mean, you kind of mentioned that apparently the Riverhounds were kind of... have kept an open line of communication with Brandt since even before Coach Steffens came in.
Yeah, I think this was a case where they knew going into this game that it was going to be Steffens' last game. How much before that, we don't really know. You know, whether it was the Open Cup loss that they said, okay, you know, now we're going to make the change, or whether it was even before that. But yeah, to your point, Brandt was in the running to be the coach when Steffens was originally hired. At the time, there was some reason why it didn't work out. I don't know what that reason was, but he's familiar enough with the club from going through that process initially that they let Steffens go, and literally, you know, almost 8 to 10 hours later, they announced that they had a new coach. So this was in the works. They knew this was going to happen, regardless, I think, of what the outcome of this game was. So, yeah, that's interesting. Because
I mean, it's interesting to the sense of, I don't know. I mean, maybe their mind was changed at some point where, for example, when I've seen this happen in the past, this kind of unusual case of immediately getting in a new manager right after a manager has been sacked, it usually tends to be more along the lines of course, the manager that was in the position maybe wasn't fulfilling the duties that the club wanted them to. But almost equally on top of that, there was a manager that was available that they really liked and really wanted to get in. And so they were willing to kind of not sacrifice their current manager, because like you said, if the current manager is doing well, then they're not going to change anything. But it's this kind of, I don't know, happy medium between these kind of two occurrences happening at the same time. On one hand, maybe you have the team not doing so well and you're looking for a managerial change. On the other hand, almost equally, you've identified a manager that you really feel positive about and really want to get into the club. I don't know, and that seems to be the case with Brandt, because yeah, I mean, I think the fact that they've had previous conversations is really telling. And we'll get into him here in a second, but I'm pretty happy about it. I'm pretty optimistic about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen any games that Brent has coached. He is the winningest active coach in Division I men's soccer. He's a four-time National Soccer Coaches Association of America Coach of the Year. He's spent the past 7 years coaching at Navy. And in his 19 years of coaching experience overall, he's won over 300 games. He has a .786 career win percentage, which is pretty insane.
It's nuts.
And he's the fastest coach in NCAA men's history to reach the 200 win mark. So the guy knows how to win. That's good. Whether or not that translates to the pro level, we'll see.
I will make a note. I mean, so that, yeah, that's a ridiculous win percentage and all this other stuff. If you actually look at his last season at Navy, it wasn't great. I mean, so he's had these kind of amazing seasons where, you know, yeah, they have great runs and all this other stuff. I think his last season, they almost had like equal wins and losses. I mean, so there was a bit of a dip, I think, in his last season, which I don't know. I was very excited, very hyped, and then I saw that. I was like, it just made me kind of step back for a second and wondering, you know, are we getting this guy at the top of his game? But yeah, I mean, no. Either way, I'm super excited. I watched there. I mean, I quickly, YouTube is like my first area of research, and I went to see if anything was there for him, and there were a couple videos, and yeah, he seems very passionate. Very energetic, very hands-on. He's on the training pitch at all times. He's yelling at the players. He's barking exactly what they want him to do. I mean, they mentioned, you know, he likes to play kind of shorter passing, but incisive shorter passing. And he, you know, he says, you know, he would stop the play and say, no, I want this kind of pass, not that kind of pass, and all this other stuff. So
I think somebody described it as possession with exploitation or something like that.
Yeah, was that John's article?
You want to possess the ball, yeah. You want to move quickly. It might have been John's article. Yeah.
But I'm really excited about it. And so, I don't know. Recently, there have been other people talking about other situations where essentially in a managerial position, it's this idea of this like snake oil metaphor. And for those of you who kind of don't know the snake oil metaphor, it's essentially this bogus product that a really good salesman just gets you to believe in and gets you to buy. And so that's essentially what a manager needs to be. He needs to, you can package up all these great ideas, these great tactical formations and all this other stuff, but if you can't get your players to believe in it, then it doesn't matter for anything. I mean, we've seen this across many managers across history. I mean, you see it with Jose Mourinho with Chelsea. He's a world-class manager, but at the end of the day, this season, he, you know, after 3 years or so of being, you know, he ran his players into the ground. And at that point, his players just weren't buying it anymore. And so you need this kind of manager that you're going to quote unquote buy the snake oil from. And just watching this like 4 minute YouTube video of Brandt, I immediately bought it. I was excited.
I was drinking the Kool-Aid.
And I mean, I'm pumped. I'm excited. Mostly because, yeah, the past couple podcasts I've been preaching this whole organization, consistency, knowing what's expected of you, and that really seems to be like what he preaches. I'm excited by his appointment. And the other thing, I mean, generally, when you get a change of manager, you usually get this like 2 or 3 game bounce where the players generally play above their level. Because it's a new manager, new energy, new things, and you're fighting for your position. Everyone has a clean slate. I mean, no,
it's an audition.
Yeah, it's an audition, exactly. So yeah, if I haven't gotten my point across already, I'm excited for Brandt.
Well, that's good. The club's going to hold an official press conference on Monday. So depending on when you're listening to it, it's either tomorrow or it's today at 3 p.m. at Highmark Stadium. So keep an eye out for that. Kev, if you find that YouTube video, send it to me. I'll put it in the show notes because I want to check it out. We'll also tweet it out so everybody can see that as well. So I thought it would be fun here to think about this. We have a new coach coming in. We really don't know, other than what Kevin saw and sort of the philosophy of what he instituted at Navy, which could be completely different than what he's going to implement here. But we have an opportunity here to sort of send our wishes out there and good vibes and whatever it is you want to call it and, you know, see if they'll come true. So let's imagine for a moment here that we have sort of this magic genie coach and we get three wishes for this team based on what we've seen so far this year. Kev, if you have three wishes for this team moving forward for the rest of the season, what would they be?
The first one would probably be, I just want to know what a Riverhounds goal looks like. I mean, so even, we'll go on and talk about the Toronto game briefly later on in the podcast. And even in those goals that we scored, one was kind of this short corner that was just curled in out of nowhere. Great. Another one was a ball was kind of bouncing around the box. It slips out to Herzog, and Herzog just puts it in the top corner. I mean, so I don't know what a Riverhounds goal looks like, and there's not a clear kind of build up to it. And even at the end of the last season, I mean, you know, you saw a lot of just worldies from Melodo and things like this. I just want to see a bit more of an identity behind the Riverhounds, not only attacking wise, but shape. And defensively, and I think we might get that with Brent.
Good.
What about you?
I gave one. I'll give my three, and then you could choose to either piggyback on them or you can give some additional ones. I think number one, I want to see a consistent set of players. You know, even in this last game, which we'll talk about, you know, starting Mike Green on right back. And then partway through the game, switched him over to left back. I thought Green did a really good job at right back and even at left back. But, you know, again, here's another player, just like Drew Russell, just like, you know, the laundry list of other players where, you know, Marshall Hollingsworth, where you start on one side, you move him to the other. Now they're midfield, now they're forward, now they're back.
We're not, you know, a European side. But you don't see many top sides doing that. You don't see a right back going to left back, going to left mid all in one game.
It's okay if you have the talent. And I think these guys have the talent. We talked to Drew Russell about this, where he has the talent to be able to play up top or to be able to play midfield. His preferred position is either at left back or right back. And the longer you let those guys play in those positions, the more comfortable they get, the more they're able to grow in those positions and become better in those positions. And that overall is going to help the team, as opposed to, oh, now we're going to throw you up here and you're basically either reteaching yourself or you're learning a lot of things on the fly, which I know is not 100% the case at the professional level. But if you are in a position, you look at Willie Hunt and Sergio Campbell as the prime example. They've played center back in almost every game that we've played this season, and they just keep getting better and better.
That's a really
and
good point.
Better. And it's just get them into positions, and you may take your lumps, but you let them go out there and you let them learn from their mistakes and you let them move forward. So I think that's my first wish.
And I think actually going off of that, that kind of gets back to, I mentioned this I think in the last podcast, where you kind of slightly tinker with enough things that ends up becoming a domino effect. Okay, so you lose Parks. Okay, so to try to compensate that, we'll put Russell up there out of position because we think he's still good going forward, but also, okay, now, you know, we have a hole that needs to be filled because Russell's going up. Okay, we'll put Mike Green there, even though he's not in tech. So you end up having these series of small compromises when on the flip side, you could say, okay, Parks is gone. Let's just play, you know, Dwayne Ewart or someone else. And they're not ideal, but at least it keeps everyone else in a kind of consistent, you know, known expectation position. Yeah.
I think my second wish would be a system that plays to this team's strengths. So it seemed like, you know, Coach Steffens wanted to come in and play a 4-2-3-1, regardless of whether or not that met the strengths of the players on the team. And you know, he had an opportunity in the offseason to really sort of pick out players to try to fit that system. I think what we've seen from this team is, could they play a 4-2-3-1? Sure. Are we generating enough chances by having sort of four attacking players? I don't think so. And I think that there have been some games where we've seen teams with a number of exploits that if we played a style that better suited our players, that we could have exploited that. And so I think, I really hope that, you know, if Brandt comes in, that he's not like, okay, we're playing, you know, a 3-3-3-2 or whatever, because that's what I played at Navy. I hope that he takes sort of a fair assessment of the players that we have and tries to build the team around what's there, not sort of what he has as this ideological formation and style in his mind, which is going to be very difficult to do because you bring in a coach based on what they've done previously. And if you've had success in a certain system, it's very easy to say, well, this is what we're going to do because this is what worked for me before. But you don't have the players you have before. You have the players you have now. So now let's build something to move forward with that.
Yeah, you need kind of a happy medium because obviously these coaches and managers, they have a philosophy to which they believe is the most effective in soccer. They have an idea about, yeah, what's the best kind of soccer to be played. That usually lends itself to a certain kind of formation, a certain playing style. And so you can kind of easily shoehorn yourself into that. But yeah, no, I absolutely agree. It's going to be vital to not try to impose this, you know, yeah, previous regime and really learn about the players and adjust to what suits them. Yeah, yeah.
And it's going to take time. I mean, you can watch, you know, all the games you want, but we're not in the locker room. We're not at the practice facility. We don't know everything there is to know about these players. So it's going to take some time to learn. But, you know, when somebody like, you know, a Drew Russell or somebody like a Marshall Hollingsworth say that their preferred position is at right or left back, then maybe you give them a shot at right or left back and you sort of see how that goes. And
that brings up another, patience is going to be big. Because not only he's coming in mid-season, but also he's not a USL coach. I mean, this will be the first time he's coaching in the USL. It's going to be the first time where he's seen these teams. I mean, at least with Coach Stephens, yeah, he's been in the USL before. He knows how this league works. As far as, you know, the kind of styles you'll see, the kind of teams you'll see and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it might take some time for the new manager to kind of, yeah, get bedded in, but so patience is going to be another one, which is interesting because I don't know how much patience we all have right now. But
it's been obviously a difficult season up to this point. We talked about, you know, the Open Cup loss. We'll get into that in a little bit more detail here in a minute. But I think that this has the potential. There have been so many things that have sort of snowballed through these first 8 games where it's been, you know, we just got our first win. We lost in the U.S. Open Cup. We lost Parks. Now we're getting a coaching change. These could all just be, you know, 4 things that we lump together in the history of this season that could still end up, you know, with us making the playoffs and moving forward. Or it could end up with us not making the playoffs, but still getting ourselves into a position where we start to see, you know, what sort of my third wish is. And I have make this team Pittsburgh, you know, give this team an identity, make this team something that Pittsburghers look at and say, you know, that is us. You know, win, lose, or draw, we know what to expect from this team, and that's what it is.
And it doesn't even necessarily need to be a tactic that plays itself out on the pitch. It just could be something where we're just, extremely passionate or extremely, I don't know, energetic or workmanlike.
A prime example, and we've seen it a few times. Marshall Hollingsworth is known for this, for just busting his butt. No matter what, he's chasing down balls and he's hassling guys. We saw it in this last game. There was a point where Kevin Kerr challenged a guy all the way down into the corner, and you saw him. The guy was going to let the ball go out, and Kerr threw his body on the ground to block it from going out of bounds and kept it in play. Like, I love seeing that stuff. That's the blue-collar, you know, hard work ethic that we like to see.
By the way, Kevin Kerr completely made me look like a fool this last game. he had a very good game. He had a very good game. So, you know, kudos to him, but we'll get into that later.
We'll get into that in a second. So those are our 3 wishes. We would love to hear what your 3 wishes are. So make sure you hit us up on Facebook. We're in a lot of the Facebook groups. Hit us up on Twitter. Let us know. We'll read some of your wishes on the preview show because obviously we have a show that's coming up here on Wednesday night. It'll be out before the Hounds' next game. So make your wishes known. We'll read them out. I don't know if Coach Brandt, if you're listening to this or not. If so, welcome to Pittsburgh. Maybe we'll get you on the show. That'd be great to talk to you. But Kev, anything else on the whole coaching situation before we jump into the Open Cup?
I mean, we could dedicate multiple shows to this new coaching situation, yeah. I feel like. So, yeah, I mean, there's definitely more. But I think for now, yeah, we'll have to table it. And let's get into the Open Cup.
So the Open Cup, the Hounds played the Lansdowne Boys midweek last week. They lost 2-0. So at the time, again, it was great. We're playing amateurs who, most of whom, after the game was over, drove home and had to work construction jobs the next day. And not only did we lose, we weren't able to score, which was, you know, the resounding theme so far this season is that we just can't find the back of the net. In hindsight, you know, after the Hounds won against TFC 2, is it really that important? The league game is more important than I think the U.S. Open Cup is. That's just my personal opinion. I think no USL team has ever won the Open Cup. And I think considering the run of form that we're in, we weren't going to win it either. It would have been nice to, you know, go deep. I think we went through the fourth round last year. But we also have a tendency of bowing out early in this tournament. I think the one upside to us losing is now we don't have that as a distraction. We focus on us and we focus on the league, especially with the new coach coming in. You know, maybe you have a few more days where you're not playing, where you're focusing on tactics and you're getting things straight. So in some ways, this could be a blessing in disguise. Would I have liked to see us win and sort of beat amateurs? Yeah, absolutely. But again, when we look back on this season, is it going to be something that we're going, ugh, we really wish we won that one Open Cup game? Or are we going to say, you know, we're going to be looking at the rest of the league games in whole? So I don't know. Yeah. What are your thoughts, Kev?
I have a ton. Yeah, I have a lot of conflicting opinions on the whole Lansdowne Boys loss. On one hand, I mean, you never want to see your team lose to a team that you really should beat. And the way this season started, an Open Cup run could have really gave us something to hang our hats on. So in that sense, it was just extremely, I mean, look, after the game, we're all devastated. We're extremely disappointed. I mean, we don't have the knowledge that we do now as far as the win against Toronto and the new manager. So back then, I mean, it was devastating. I completely agree. And second, your kind of silver lining of, if we ended up keeping Coach Steffens, I think this loss ends up actually becoming bigger, because Coach Steffens obviously knows his squad, knows his team. With a new manager in, this does give him more time on the training pitch with his players, which I think is going to be vital. Anytime you're a new manager coming into a new season, you know, you don't have a preseason with your team. And so you have to learn on the fly, and you have to trust what you're seeing and what you're hearing from people behind the club and things like that. So, I mean, more time on the training pitch is only going to be a good thing for Brandt. And so in that way, I guess it's kind of good. But, I mean, you know, and even though, I don't know, I don't really like the whole, well, no USL team has ever won it, so, you know, we weren't going to have a chance anyway. I mean, you know, maybe I'm a romantic, but yeah, I think a good run in the cup, and you know, who knows, the longer you're in it, you never know what's going to happen. And it would have been, you know, you love winning trophies. And so, and you love getting those days out against top MLS sides. So in that sense, I really like the cup, and I think it should always be taken seriously. But yeah, I think there is a silver lining here with the new manager coming in and potentially getting more time on the training pitch.
Yeah, I think what we have seen so far this season, I don't know if this would be our year in the Open Cup, but I, you know, last year DC came to Pittsburgh, which was a huge game for the fans, for the team. It's an entertaining tournament, and it's a shame that we're no longer in it. But sometimes it's the whole, you know, take one step back, two steps forward sort of thing. And I think that losing the Open Cup is just one of those one step back that we have to face in order to potentially take two steps forward this season.
Well, let me ask you this. I think then that only becomes valid if you think this season is still, I don't want to say
salvageable.
Salvageable. Well, I mean, so what would you say a successful season would be after this start? I mean, let's face it. Anytime you have to change a manager mid-season, things aren't going well, obviously. Right. So what would you say? I mean, and I don't want to linger on this too much because we're already, what, like 30 minutes in. What would you say now? We changed managers. We're out of the Open Cup, but we got our first win. What is a successful season now going forward?
I think that for me, a successful season...
Because I think this is an important question because...
No, it is.
If things end up happening, you know, we should be able to, at the end of the season, be able to look back and say, yeah, that was kind of crappy. But from this point moving forward, we saw these things that we really felt like we needed to see. And now we feel like we're in a better position and all this other stuff. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know what a successful season looks like.
I think for me, you know, we've seen a number of these teams play. And we've said this before, and we've said this talking to some of the players. We're not getting crushed in these games. We have the players, I still believe this, that player for player, we can beat any one of these teams that we've faced thus far. So I think a successful season for me is starting to reflect some of that. You know, considering the hole that we're in, we're still not out of playoff contention. You know, we're basically, you know, this 3 points that we got this weekend is actually like a 6-point swing, considering where TFC 2 was in the standings and the fact that we have a game in hand over TFC 2. So that's amazing. We could still be making the playoffs pretty easily with the number of games that are left. Do I think that making the playoffs is a sign of a successful season? No, considering what we've done thus far. Do I want to see us make the playoffs? Yes. I think what I would consider as a successful season would be seeing some semblance of an identity, seeing a team that fits and plays to that identity. And even if we go out and we lose the next 3 games, if we're seeing something special start to happen with the players, where the players are where they know they need to be, and you start to see little improvements here and there and consistency and things like that, and you start to see more in the attack and we're getting more chances, more consistent chances and things like that, I think if this team has a strong identity towards the end of the year, even if we only win, you know, half or less than half of our remaining games, I still think that would be a successful season considering everything that's gone on already. I think anything above and beyond that is icing for me. What do you think?
I would generally, I think, have to back that. I mean, there have been games previously in the season where hopeless is a strong word, but kind of reflects how I felt watching some of the games. I mean, we didn't look like scoring. We didn't look like we're going to win. We didn't really even look like we're going to tie, because you always know that we're potentially, you know, leaking a goal at the back. So I don't want to see another game where I just feel hopeless. Like, there's no chance we're going to get anything out of this game. And so, yeah, I mean, you would... And it's hard to even say I want to see us get into the playoffs, because then, I mean, how confident are you of actually making a run in the playoffs? And so, yeah, I kind of, I don't know, maybe my theme of this season is, yeah, building the platform, stopping the bleeding, and then, but even just that kind of language kind of makes me, like, am I saying, like, all right, let's not, just set up for next season? Like,
you're not saying move forward, you're saying stop the bleeding, which...
Right, that's not good. Maybe I just need to have a word with myself and get my head straightened out.
Go look at yourself in a mirror and you have a conversation. In the meantime, let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk some TFC too.
We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Twitter at Mongols, on Facebook at Mongols, and email us at howl@mongols.com. Any questions, comments, or reactions read on air could win you your own Riverhounds jersey. Thanks!
All right, we're back. Kev, hopefully you got your head straight in that short amount of time. So TFC 2, we came out, we got our first win. Yeah, people were going bananas because we actually got two goals and they weren't from Romeo Parks. Yeah. You know, we could talk a lot about formation, which we traditionally do, but in hindsight, considering that it was Coach Steffen's last game, I don't think there's a lot of stock we can put in formation, just because who knows what's going to happen with the new coach and things like that. The important thing is that the Hounds won 2-1. We got goals from Maloto and Herzog. Kev, talk us through both of those goals briefly.
I mean, yeah, so as I mentioned before, it wasn't... Both of them kind of came out of nowhere. So Maloto's goal, we had a corner, and Maloto came short to take the short corner. And honestly, I don't know what was going through his mind. I don't know if it was a cross. I don't know if it was a shot. But he kind of curls the ball in, and it just sneaks in on the back corner. So, I don't... I guess only he knows if it was a cross or a shot, but it was well placed nonetheless.
It felt like Maloto of last season, where Maloto would get the ball and you would think that nothing was going to come of it, and all of a sudden he has it in the back of the net. Like, he has this ability to score. I don't want to call them sneaky goals, but they're almost unexpected goals, where it's in the buildup of play and you think he's going to do something with it, and all of a sudden he's ripping a shot and it's in. That's what this felt like, where he was just a short corner, and all he did was just lift his head and just curl it right over the goalie, and it just went right in.
Going back to that metaphor, I mean, he's one of the players that can play the piano. You need eight players that can carry the piano, and you need like three players that can play the piano. He's someone that, yeah, out of nowhere, he can create a moment of magic, and the ball's in the back of the net, and that's what this one was. Yeah, I mean, and I think that's what he's all about. I mean, when I think about Maloto, I think about, yeah, just big moments. And that, I think that's what he's made from. The second goal, the ball is kind of, I don't know if it was a corner, a free kick, long throw in, but essentially the ball gets put into their box and the ball is just bouncing around. And I actually have to give a lot of credit to Herzog, because I think a lot of players can kind of get drawn into that excitement or that, you know, and kind of get drawn to the ball. He actually kind of takes a step back and positions himself in a way where he kind of anticipates where the ball is going to bounce after this mad scrap. And rightfully so, the ball kind of bounces out to him. And it's a really good strike, to be fair. The ball kind of bounces up and it's at like hip height. And it's kind of behind him. And yeah, he kind of just takes a step back and kind of like half bicycles it into the end of the top left corner, with power, with accuracy. I mean, and once again, I kind of feel like that's what Herzog's about in relation to like Maloto. I think Herzog, you know, at his time at Penn State, he has moments in him where he looks like a clear cut above everyone else on the pitch. He has this ability. I mean, and that's obvious. I mean, just from his past of getting drafted by the Red Bulls and all this other stuff, he has this in him where, you know, a good five and he's the best player on the pitch. It's just now getting him to be more consistent in that way.
Yeah, I thought the goal was amazing. To your point, it was all over the place. I think Schaefer took a long throw in, Branson flicked it, and then it like flicked off Drew Russell's head. And Herzog was just left all alone on the back corner. And that volley, I mean, that should be up for goal of the week contention. Because it was, you watch it and he makes it look so effortless. Like, most guys swing at that and they miss completely. And not only did he rip it hard, he ripped it top corner where the goalie couldn't get it. So it was, yeah, it was an impressive strike.
And what you just said there, I mean, Maloto's goal, as great as it was, I don't know, I'd have to watch it back again. But maybe you can just say the goalkeeper wasn't great for it. Yeah, the goalkeeper was well positioned for Herzog's goal. He was right there. He might have even got fingertips to it.
He was close.
The shot was just too good, and it put it past him. Yeah, it was a great finish.
Yeah, so two really good goals, two big goals from two big players that I think we were expecting a lot of coming out in this season. I think one of the takeaways is that Maloto seems to be getting back into that late season form, which, you know, in the games we watched at the end of last season, he looked like the most dangerous player for the Hounds, which is really encouraging. I think jumping into sort of the takeaways from this game, I mentioned earlier, the center backs look solid again. There were a number of times where they had an attack that was building up, and you would have either Sergio Campbell or Willie Hunt just snuff it out completely. And when they get the ball back, there's no panic in them. They very calmly just sort of turn it around. There was one point in particular where I saw Willie Hunt, and he had three Toronto players around him, and all he did was lift his head up, dribble through them, and make an outlet pass to whoever was out wide. They have been the rock that I think also gives me confidence moving forward. They've been holding it down, and you need that solid core through the middle, and they absolutely provide it. Kudos to both of you if you're listening. Big ups. I also thought that we started to see flashes of a Curran-Melodo combo where there was a lot of one-touch, nice back-and-forth movement at points during the game, and I think that's encouraging as well. I think Kerr did a really good job. There were a number of times early on where he was sort of floating all over the field. And then as the game wore on, he was staying outright much more. And I think when he stays out wide and he's able to be that outlet pass and make those long runs, he's so much more dangerous than when you don't know where to find him. And if you have Melodo in the middle of the field and the two of them are working together, it could be really dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I completely, I said it before, and I'll say it now again. Yeah, I have to give a lot of credit to Kerr. I think, yeah, he had a really good game, I think, against Toronto. And I you want to see your best player be your best player. And I felt like for the first part of the season so far, I just didn't see that. I didn't see anyone grabbing the game by the scruff of the neck and saying, no, I'm going to drag us out of this, and I'm going to be the best player on the pitch and you know, get a goal for us or win us this game or whatever like that. I didn't see anyone doing that. And yeah, I thought Kerr had a really good game. I had a really solid game. I think his touches were great. His movement was great. His vision, his passing, his work rate. That's the performance you want to see out of your, I want to say less so of your captain, but that's the kind of performance you want to see out of your best player, and Kerr gave that. So, yeah, that was really very, very happy to be proven wrong.
One other point that I thought was interesting, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this. In the 57th minute, we subbed off Bisou and put Herzog in, and that put Herzog in the midfield, which I originally thought, like, oh, here we go again, playing a player out of position. You know, how is this going to work out? And there were a few times where Herzog sort of had to track back and play defensively. But there were a few times that I thought he might do pretty well out wide in the midfield, where he was, especially on his goal, had he been the center forward, he may have been sucked into the play a lot more. Whereas when he was the left side midfield, he was on that back post waiting for something to come for him. And there's a few times where he could sort of lead the attack, or there were a number of 1-2-3 combos that he was putting together with people like Melodo or Okai to really build up the offense, playing on that left side as opposed to staying up top and sort of waiting for the ball to come to him. And I thought it was interesting. I thought that might be an interesting place to see him play some more. I don't know if you agree or not.
Yeah, no, I would second that. I think you summed it up quite nicely.
I left Kevin speechless. That's amazing.
You left me speechless, Mike.
What are your thoughts on, so we started Melodo all the way up top.
I was very surprised at that. Seeing that at first, I don't think that's his position. But I mean, there was a lot of fluid nature, I think, with it, and so I don't think he was a set striker, I think, by any means. I mean, look, you want him not having to focus on a defensive part of his game. And doing that and putting him up top allows him to kind of, forget that defensive aspect of his game. So, you know, any way where we can just keep him up the pitch longer is good. I don't think striker is his position going forward. At the same time, I don't know how many options we have. I mean, Herzog.
Yeah.
And I think what Ewert is probably a self-identified striker. But other than that, you're looking at, I don't know, slim options.
I mean, maybe you don't go with a lone striker. I mean, we'll see what
happens. I mean, especially when Melodo was kind of up top, quote unquote, there were points, especially in the first half, where in my head, it was kind of this, like, it was essentially like, it was like a 4-6, and that was it. There was like no, like kind of front line. It was just four defenders, and then just a mishmash of some players will go up at some point, and some players will drop back, and almost playing without an identified striker. I don't know. Who knows? At the same time, it's even hard to kind of talk about this now because who knows what the new manager will do.
But I think if it works, that's great. I think that one of the advantages of having Maloto so high is he is much more of a playmaker, and I think that having him that high drew other people into the play. That's where we saw a lot of him and Kerr working off of each other and pulling Okai further up the pitch to help out in the attack and things like that.
But I will say, I don't necessarily want to see, I mean, you just used the word playmaker, and I would agree that Maloto is a playmaker. I mean, you're not, I want my striker and I want my main attacker to get numbers throughout the season. I want to see goals out. And sure, Maloto has goals in him, but I don't think he has the goal return of a main striker.
You want somebody like Corey Herzog. When we talked to him, he said he wants to score all of the goals. Like,
that's what I love. That's exactly what you want to hear from your striker. You want them to be selfish, cocky. No, I'm scoring four times this game. And that's what you want to see. I just don't think, I completely agree with you in that terminology you used to describe Maloto of being a playmaker. I don't think he's an attacking midfielder necessarily. I mean, we're getting into semantics here, but he is someone that I think is a catalyst to lead to goals. And because I mean, how he scores goals, you can't rely on that game in, game out. I mean, he scores from a short corner curling, and you can't think he's going to do that every game.
Right.
So yeah, in that sense, I don't know how he fits into a system, but.
Oh, he'll fit in. Don't you worry.
He'll fit in.
So this was good. I mean, it was good to get the monkey off our backs, get this first win. You know, it's not a silver lining. I don't want to play Debbie Downer here, but the thing to keep in mind is, yes, we got the win, but TFC2 was missing a number of their key players, including Raheem Edwards.
I will say, I thought about that. I thought about, like, hey, we got our final win, but it was against TFC2, and they're not good, and they're missing players. And then I checked myself. I was like, you know what? No, we haven't had a win at all. So we got a win. I don't care who's from. So it's something to be extremely positive about.
This is what good teams do, is they win regardless of the circumstances, winning regardless of who they're playing. Good teams often have a tendency of playing down to their competition. And so this was a case where we didn't necessarily do that. I thought that for most of the game, we were the dominant team. And so it's good to get the win. Like I said, good to get the monkey off our backs. So now we've got nowhere to go but forward. Hopefully, this wasn't just a case of the guys, you know, pushing extra hard because it was Coach Steffen's last game. And once he's gone, then we have a letdown. But to your point earlier, I think there's going to be a lot of guys trying to audition for spots. So I think that's going to push competition even further.
Yeah, I think just my last point would be, after Wednesday.
Your last point is
Well, no, after Wednesday and Thursday, I was thinking, like, this is going to be a terrible podcast. Like, this is, it's not going to be good. We're going to be
after sad. Last Wednesday.
That's what I meant. Sorry.
I thought you meant, like, after this upcoming Wednesday, you're foreshadowing that we're just going to throw it all away.
I meant, for us recording now.
Right.
Like, right now. I was thinking back in the past, like, I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to have to, like, this is, but yeah, I think a lot of positive things have come since then. And just hopefully we can keep the positive things rolling.
Speaking of positive things, I counted 2 Mongols in this game. Somebody on Twitter, I believe it was Kim, pointed out that there was a video leaked of people trying to retrieve the balls, potentially in a legal fashion. So, or I should say in illegal fashion, as in not allowed. So that's not good. But 2 Mongols is good. So we're still putting together the plans about the donations for Mongols. So keep an eye on that. Keep us in check. We're going to start putting those totals on the website as well. I think that brings our total to 7 so far this year, which is pretty substantial. But I think that's pretty much it for this game. Like we said, not a ton that we can take away and look forward to for the next game, just because we have no idea what's going to happen with the new coach and the new style and all of that. Next Saturday, the Hounds will be playing against New York Red Bulls 2 in Harrison, New Jersey at 10 p.m. And the reason for that is the Red Bulls, their parent club, play TFC right before that at 7 p.m. in Harrison, New Jersey. So it'll be great that the Hounds get to play in Red Bull Arena. We talked about it before as being a beautiful stadium, but it'll probably be empty because you have, I mean, unless you have a lot of people hanging around after the first game, you know, most people are probably going to be heading back to the city at that point. The Red Bulls did just come off a massive win against NYCFC 2. They beat them 7-0 over the weekend to stake their claim as the New York team, which is like, I saw that and my head almost exploded because 7-0. Holy cow. Yeah, so that's something to keep an eye out for. I think the only thing, you know, keep an eye on things this week. Obviously, we have a preview show coming up on Wednesday where we'll go into the Red Bulls 2 game in more detail. I'm assuming there's going to be a lot more information that's leaked out about Coach Brandt over the course of the week. We'll see if we can dig up anything as well for that preview show. Otherwise, Kev, do you have any other thoughts before we wrap this thing up?
No, you don't want to get me started on the whole 10 p.m. kickoff, so I'll just shut up now.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, that's a discussion for I think that roundtable, which I think considering everything that's been going on, I think I need to get that on the schedule and start getting the pieces together because I think it's a very apropos discussion. So we'll make that happen. All right. Well, then I guess if you don't have anything else for Kev, I am Mike. Stay tuned. You know, Hounds, good job this weekend, and let's keep the good times rolling. And we will talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.